Welcome to True Crime Cat Lawyer. I'm your host, Elise, and sometimes my cat Winston joins me. This podcast contains content of a graphic nature that might not be suitable for all listeners, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, and crimes against animals and children. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Before we get started with today's episode, I do want to add an extra trigger warning. This episode discusses child sex abuse and rape. While I don't get into any of the specific details, I do want to make it clear that these topics will be mentioned throughout the episode. Please listen to this episode with caution. Mary Kay Schmitz was born in Tustin, California on January 30, 1962. She was the fourth of seven children raised in a strict Catholic household. Mary Kay was extremely close to her dad, John. Author Greg Olson said that Mary Kay was her dad's, quote, staunchest ally and her mom's greatest disappointment, end quote. Mary Kay's dad was elected as California State Senator in 1964. He was re-elected 2 years later and spent a total of 6 years in the California legislature. In June 1970, John moved the family to Washington, D.C. while he made a run for president. The family later moved back to California after John lost the election. In August 1973, the Schmitz family finished construction on their new pool. One day, around 3:30 p.m., Mary Kay's mom took the life jacket off her youngest son, who was three, and sent him to the bathroom. She then went inside the house to work in her office. At the time, Mary Kay and one of her other brothers were still playing in the pool. At some point, somewhere between a few minutes, but possibly up to 30 minutes, the family started looking for the young boy who had disappeared. Sadly, he was found at the bottom of the pool. According to what Mary Kay told author Greg Olson, neither she nor her other brother saw or heard the young boy anywhere near the pool. Mary Kay had allegedly been tasked with watching her youngest brother, whom she adored. She was heartbroken when he died, and his death had a profound impact on her. Mary Kay attended an all-girls Catholic high school. She was on the varsity cheerleading squad for 3 years. According to friends, Mary Kay liked to party and, quote, always liked to live on the edge and do dangerous things, end quote. Those same friends said that Mary Kay measured her worth by how many guys wanted her. To Mary Kay, popularity was everything. When she was 17, Mary Kay's mom pushed her daughter into running for Miss Newport Beach, even though Mary Kay wasn't even old enough to enter the pageant. Mary Kay ultimately didn't win, but she did place in the top five. John, Mary Kay's dad, planned to run for U.S. Senate in 1982, but his political career was permanently damaged after it came out that he fathered two children out of wedlock from an affair with one of his former students. The mistress threatened to tell Mary Kay's mom about the affair and the children several times. She taped conversations between herself and John, and she even showed up at John's family's church. But the real reason the affair and the children came to light was because the mistress and her youngest child ended up in the hospital one night, and hospital staff suspected child abuse. The woman identified John as the father of her kids. John had no shame or remorse for the affair. He and Mary Kay's mom separated for a period of time, but they eventually reconciled. According to one of Mary Kay's friends, quote, something changed after her father's affair broke. Her ability to make decisions in her life based on things that were good for her, she lost that ability, end quote. Mary Kay went to Arizona State and continued her partying ways. She met Steve Letourneau at a frat party. According to a friend, Mary Kay never really loved Steve, and she never planned on marrying him. But Mary Kay got pregnant at 22, and abortion wasn't an option because of her Catholic upbringing. Mary Kay thought she could, quote-unquote, learn to love Steve, but ultimately settled for a man she didn't love because of her family. Mary Kay was almost 4 months pregnant when she and Steve got married on June 30th, 1984. For Mary Kay, everything was perfect with the exception of a groom that she didn't love. She later gave birth to a son, Steve Jr. Mary Kay and Steve dropped out of college and moved to Anchorage, Alaska. Steve worked as a bag handler for Alaska Airlines. In 1985, the family moved from Alaska to Seattle because Steve was transferred to SeaTac Airport. Mary Kay enrolled at Seattle University to finish up her degree. According to those who knew the Letourneaus, there didn't seem to be much, if any, affection between them. Their relationship seemed more like a business deal. Steve was working all the time, trying really hard to provide for his family, and he never got to finish his education. In the summer of 1987, Mary Kay gave birth to their second baby when she was 25 years old. In September 1988, Mary Kay started working in the Highline School District. Mary Kay was an enthusiastic teacher. She was always prepared and she always went the extra mile. In the late summer of 1989, Mary Kay was offered a job at Shorewood Elementary teaching the second grade. Despite the financial struggles the Letourneaus faced throughout their marriage, Mary Kay was expecting her third child in the spring of 1991. Several months later, when the school year started, Mary Kay first met Vili Fulau, who was a second grade student in her class. Vili was born on June 26, 1983. He was one of four children raised by a single mother, Suna. Psychologists would later say that Vili was a confused and emotionally needy child who had a violent home life at times. His mom, Suna, worked long hours in a bakery in order to provide for her four kids. Vili's dad wasn't in the picture, and it would later come out that his dad had fathered 18 kids with five different women. In the fall of 1993, Mary Kay was pregnant with the couple's fourth child. She was moved to teaching sixth grade at that time. The Letourneaus' financial situation worsened after they moved to the Normandy Park neighborhood. They got behind in payments for their van, and their home was headed for foreclosure. Mary Kay and Steve had to file for Chapter 13 bankruptcy. The couple owed the IRS $10,000 in back taxes, and their total debt was almost $50,000. Mary Kay always forced Steve to call his mom to borrow money, and Steve's mom always bailed them out for the sake of her grandkids. Mary Kay's quote-unquote obsession with Vili deepened in the fall of 1995 after the two were reunited when Vili entered her sixth grade class. Mary Kay believed that Vili was incredibly artistically talented. She bought him art supplies, she took him to museums, and she encouraged him to write poetry. This might be red flag behavior, but I think for those who knew Mary Kay, it wasn't initially. And that's because Mary Kay was always close to and beloved by her students. She said she felt closer to her students than her own kids. This isn't an excuse, though Mary Kay would definitely use it as such later on, but her marriage was in trouble during this time. In early 1996, Mary Kay suffered a miscarriage and she was close to a breakdown. But Mary Kay, quote unquote, took solace in her connection with Vili, as inappropriate as that was. Now, I want to put another trigger warning here for the rest of the episode because I'm going to be talking about the sexual abuse of a child. I'm not going into any details, but there's going to be disturbing and upsetting quotes from Mary Kay that I want to make sure you're warned about before we continue on. So, Mary Kay was clearly unhappy in her marriage. She married a man she didn't love, they had financial difficulties all throughout their marriage, and she had four kids to provide for and take care of. Vili and his brother spent the night at the Letourneaus' home frequently, starting in the summer of 1996. At that point, Vili and Mary Kay became inseparable, and Mary Kay eventually started, quote-unquote, fantasizing about Vili. Mary Kay even brought Vili on a family trip to Alaska. And while they were there, Mary Kay asked to borrow her father-in-law's truck so that she could, quote, show Vili the stars, end quote. They ended up being gone for hours. When Vili was 12 years old, he bet a friend $20 that he would have sex with Mary Kay. A few days before his birthday, Mary Kay sexually abused Vili for the first time. On June 19, 1996, police came across a suspicious car at a marina in Des Moines, Washington. Police thought it was a possible DUI, but as they approached the van, they saw that there was a female driver along with a young boy under a sleeping bag. The officer asked Mary Kay to get out of the van and asked her for her ID. She identified herself and said that she was a teacher at Shoreline Elementary. Mary Kay said there was no issue, so there was no reason for police to interrogate her. Mary Kay told police that she was watching Vili overnight because his mom was working a late shift. She then told police that she left her home that night to quote-unquote teach her husband a lesson. Police tried to reach out to Steve to corroborate Mary Kay's story, but no one answered the door at the Letourneaus home. According to the officer, Mary Kay seemed nervous. She lied and told the officer that Billy was 18 years old. But Billy told the officer that he was 14 years old. Either way, Billy had no ID to prove his age. Billy told police that he'd been staying with the Letourneaus when a fight broke out between Mary Kay and Steve. Billy, who was scared of violence, got upset and left. He walked down the street to a grocery store where Mary Kay later picked him up and they went to the marina to sleep. It appeared that Mary Kay was only wearing a t-shirt and it seemed like Billy was trying to put his clothes back on in the sleeping bag. Police took Billy into protective custody. Mary Kay told the police that they were blowing everything out of proportion and said that there was nothing improper going on in the back of the van. But police disagreed, and they told Mary Kay that there was a, quote, appearance of impropriety, end quote. At the station, police tried to get a hold of Billy's mom, Suna, but there was no answer at their house. They were able to track Suna down at her work. According to police, Suna seemed unconcerned and asked to speak to both Billy and Mary Kay. After talking with both of them, Suna told the police that she felt completely comfortable with Billy being with Mary Kay. She said that she trusted Mary Kay and they could release Billy back into Mary Kay's custody. There wasn't enough evidence that a sex crime had been committed, so there was no official action by the police. And because of this lack of official action, no report was sent to the school district. 2 weeks later, a lieutenant for the police department sent a report to the city attorney of Des Moines, but nothing happened after that. In October 1996, Mary Kay told a friend that she'd fallen in love and called the person her soulmate. Mary Kay didn't give her friend any details about this person, except that he was a student. Her friend assumed that the person was a college student that Mary Kay had met through summer art classes she took. A few weeks later, Mary called her friend again to tell her that she was pregnant. But that's not all. Mary Kay told her friend that Steve wasn't the father of her baby. Mary Kay told this friend that she was going to have the baby and divorce Steve, and Steve had no idea about any of it. In fact, Mary Kay told her sixth grade class that she was pregnant before she even told her coworkers. The sexual abuse of Billy was uncovered in February 1997 after Steve found love letters from Mary Kay to Billy in their home. At that time, Mary Kay was 6 months pregnant. And although Steve didn't know it, it was later determined that Billy was the father of the baby. Steve told a family member about what he'd found, but he didn't report anything himself. Instead, the family member called officials at Shorewood Elementary to report the abuse. Mary Kay was questioned and arrested for rape on March 4, 1997. When Billy was asked about the quote-unquote relationship, he said that he and Mary Kay were boyfriend and girlfriend, and he confirmed that the two had had sex. Billy told the prosecuting attorney about exchanging rings with Mary Kay along with love letters. According to Billy, his brother and best friend knew about him and Mary Kay. His brother had even allegedly walked in on Mary Kay and Billy in bed together one time. Mary Kay claimed that she didn't know having sex with a minor was a crime, and she was stunned to learn about statutory rape. She maintained that her and Billy's relationship was one of quote-unquote true love, and she was firmly convinced that it was love and not a crime. And I want to be clear, I'm using air quotes on relationship because I recognize that a minor can't consent to being in a relationship with an adult or consent to having sex with an adult. I'm only using that language because that's what Mary Kay has called it. But because I disagree with that characterization, I'm putting relationship in air quotes. While she was waiting for trial, Mary Kay was evaluated by a psychiatrist. According to this psychiatrist, Mary Kay was bipolar, and her bipolar condition was so severe that she could, quote, only focus on the hypersexual subject, aka Billy, and her involvement with him, end quote. According to the psychiatrist, Mary Kay's bipolar disorder was marked by hypomania followed by mania. She made a list of key events that affected Mary Kay's behavior, including Mary Kay's dad having cancer, her disintegrating marriage, including Steve cheating on Mary Kay and fathering another child, along with Mary Kay's miscarriage, all of which took place within a year leading up to her abusing Billy. According to the psychiatrist, all of this sent Mary Kay into a depression that was followed by mania. Mary Kay's mania was marked by pleasure in high-risk activities, and Billy, quote-unquote, became the man in her life, even though he was only 12 years old. Mary Kay pled guilty to 2 counts of second-degree rape of a child in 1997. She asked for leniency at her sentencing. Billy's mom, Suna, spoke at sentencing and said that she didn't agree with what Mary Kay did, but she also didn't think that Billy was the victim of anything. Suna said that it was in the best interest of her granddaughter, aka Mary Kay and Billy's baby, to keep Mary Kay out of prison. She said that sending Mary Kay to prison would, quote, inflict unnecessary pain on Billy, who would carry the guilt with him as long as Mary Kay was in prison, end quote. Suna would later say in interviews that Billy was physically and emotionally old beyond his years. She questioned Billy's closeness with Mary Kay, but Billy repeatedly told her that nothing was going on between them. Suna said that she assumed that she could trust Mary Kay with her son, and she was shocked about the abuse. The judge sentenced Mary Kay to 7.5 years in prison. All but 6 months were suspended. A suspended sentence is basically what it sounds like. The full or remainder of the sentence is put off as long as the person meets certain conditions. If the conditions are violated, then the suspended sentence can be revoked and the original sentence can be imposed. So, Mary Kay would only serve 6 months as long as she entered a treatment program for sex offenders, took medication for her bipolar disorder, and had no contact with Billy. Mary Kay was released from jail in January 1998 and moved into the spare bedroom of a friend's home. Mary Kay did start taking medication for her bipolar disorder, but she soon stopped taking her medication and quote-unquote rebelled against her sexual deviancy counselor. And even though Mary Kay wasn't supposed to have any contact with Billy, she completely ignored that order. On February 3rd, 1998, at 2:24 a.m., an officer who was on neighborhood patrol came across a suspicious car. He ran the plates on the car and then drove past it. The car was registered to Mary Kay, who was a registered sex offender. So the officer circled back to the car. Mary Kay told the officer that she was alone in the car. She didn't have any ID and she gave the officer a fake name. Then Billy got out of the car and also gave police a fake name. Billy and Mary Kay told 2 different stories about how they ended up together that night. Mary Kay was rearrested. In her car, police found $6,200 in cash, which is almost $12,000 today, along with baby clothes and Mary Kay's passport. Mary Kay claimed that the money was for dermatology appointments and her divorce lawyer. Billy told his counselor that he and Mary Kay had sex at least once during the month that Mary Kay was out on parole. Again, the language I'm using isn't accurate to describe what happened to Billy. He was raped by Mary Kay. But Billy didn't see things this way. So I'm not agreeing with how things were worded, and Billy was absolutely raped by Mary Kay. During the brief time Mary Kay was out on parole, she managed to get pregnant with their 2nd baby. Mary Kay is probably one of the most fertile people we've covered on this podcast, even above Diane Downs. The judge was pissed that Mary Kay couldn't abide by the conditions of her suspended sentence, and he immediately revoked it. He said that Mary Kay's actions were, quote, extraordinarily egregious and profoundly disturbing, end quote. He ordered Mary Kay back to prison to finish her sentence. Prosecutors considered filing another rape charge against Mary Kay after the 2nd pregnancy, but they later decided not to. Mary Kay gave birth to her 2nd daughter with Billy while she was in prison for the 2nd time. While Mary Kay was in prison, Suna, Billy's mom, was granted custody of their 2 daughters. Billy struggled with the notoriety of the case. He did a lot of partying for a while, and then he dropped out of school when he was 15. He struggled with depression and alcoholism, and even attempted suicide in March 1999. Steve filed for divorce while Mary Kay was in prison, and he was granted custody of their 4 kids. Mary Kay was allowed to see her kids while she was in prison, but she was denied permission to attend her dad's funeral. Again, despite being told to have no contact with one another, Mary Kay and Billy communicated in covert ways throughout Mary Kay's time in prison. Mary Kay would send coded messages in the caps of her baby's breast milk bottles. She also sent audio tapes to Villy and had fellow inmates make phone calls for her because she couldn't contact Villy directly. In 2002, Villy's family sued the Highland School District, the City of Des Moines, and the Des Moines Police Department for emotional suffering, lost wages, and the cost of raising Villy's daughters. The lawsuit claimed that the school and the police department failed to protect Villy from Mary Kay. During the civil trial, Villy said that he still believed that Mary Kay was the, quote, best thing that ever happened to him, end quote. But he also said that he wished their relationship had been different. Throughout the trial, the police department and school district insisted that the, quote, unquote, romance was so bizarre that no one could have predicted it. Their lawyer said that the, quote, unquote, relationship started off school grounds after the school year ended. And the police department said that they simply had no evidence of sexual abuse until it was too late. After the 10-week trial, Villy's family lost their suit and no damages were awarded. Many thought that Villy's mom, Suna, only filed the lawsuit because she'd run out of the money she'd earned from talking about the case on various talk shows and tabloids. She made about $180,000, which is closer to $313,000 today. Mary Kay was released from prison into a community placement program on August 4, 2004. The next day, Mary Kay registered as a lifetime level 2, aka medium risk, sex offender. Level 2 sex offenders have to register their place of residence, submit to regular drug and polygraph tests, obey all laws, abstain from alcohol use, stay out of sex shops and strip clubs, and they have to enroll in sex offender treatment. A no-contact order was once again in place after Mary Kay was released from prison, but this time, Villy was able to successfully petition the court to revoke the no-contact order because he was no longer a minor. By that point, he was 21 years old. After Mary Kay's second release from prison, she and Villy rented a house in Normandy Park, in the same neighborhood where Mary Kay had lived and raised her family with Steve Letourneau. A little less than a year after Mary Kay's release, she and Villy got married at the Columbia Winery in Woodinville, Washington. The details of their wedding were shrouded in secrecy. Guests had to sign privacy agreements because the wedding was being filmed by Entertainment Tonight. Entertainment Tonight was given exclusive access to photograph their wedding. Cell phones and video cameras weren't allowed other than Entertainment Tonight. At the time, Mary Kay was 43 and Villy was 21. For the most part, Mary Kay, Villy, and their daughters largely stayed out of the public eye after they got married. Mary Kay was no longer allowed to teach in the state of Washington, so she got a job as a legal assistant while Villy worked as a DJ. In 2015, Mary Kay and Villy sat down for an interview with Barbara Walters for 2020. Mary Kay insisted that her relationship with Villy was, quote, consensual and romantic, not predatory, end quote. But we all know that can't be the truth because Villy wasn't old enough to consent to anything at the time Mary Kay raped him. Mary Kay and Villy seemingly drifted apart around 2017. Villy filed a petition for separation. The two tried to work things out and even lived together for a few months after their legal separation, but they ended up getting divorced in 2019. Early on, Villy said that he wasn't a victim and he wasn't ashamed of his quote-unquote relationship with Mary Kay. But in May 2020, Villy said that he saw things clearly now and realized that it wasn't a healthy quote-unquote relationship from the start. After a six-month-long battle with cancer, Mary Kay Letourneau died in July 2020. She left her estate to Villy and her daughters. Before her death, Mary Kay told friends that she was remorseful about sexually abusing Villy. Her friends claimed that Mary Kay understood, quote, she had really made a mess of her life and the lives of many other people, end quote. Mary Kay wrote a series of letters to friends and family before she died. She wrote that she had a lot of wrongs to right. She wanted her family and friends to know that she was sorry for the mistakes she made and that she loved Villy to the end. Shortly after Mary Kay's death, Villy said that while he used to question Mary Kay's intentions, there was no perversion, and Mary Kay didn't have a history of quote-unquote odd things involving other minors. I wasn't initially sure that I wanted to cover this case on the podcast. It's a disturbing case, but it also highlights a cultural double standard that our society has for female sex offenders. According to a recent Seattle Times article, quote, "The public is more willing to accept the female abuser's claim that she had a relationship with the victim," end quote. In cases where the male victim is a teenager, like Villy, the sexual abuse is more likely to be dismissed as a rite of passage. This is an incredibly inappropriate and dangerous way to treat male sex abuse victims. A 2013 study found that women were responsible for 19% of child sex abuse committed in positions of trust. And female sexual predators in teacher-student cases face lesser sentences than male sexual predators. Quote, "Mary Kay Letourneau was a rapist, but there was a faction of the population that still treated it like a fairy tale," end quote. When Mary Kay was arrested, people didn't necessarily view her actions as rape, despite it clearly meeting both the moral and legal definitions of rape. Media coverage of Mary Kay and Villy at the time portrayed Mary Kay as a, quote, "tragic lover ensnared in an ill-fated romance that society was simply unable to understand," end quote. According to a Rolling Stone article in 2020, quote, "perhaps more than any other figure in recent history, the media coverage of Mary Kay is responsible for perpetuating the gendered double standard associated with child rape," end quote. The dominant narrative was that Mary Kay was, quote, "a woman swept away by forces beyond her control," and that she and Villy were star-crossed lovers, end quote. Although there were mental health issues at play with Mary Kay, this doesn't excuse her rape of Villy, especially when you consider the language that Mary Kay used throughout. She tried to excuse her crime by saying that she loved Villy and she didn't know that statutory rape was a crime. But none of that matters, because Villy was 12 years old when she raped him and he couldn't give consent and didn't know that what was happening to him was wrong. I wanted to include information for the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is a service provided by RAIN. RAIN is the largest anti-sexual violence organization in the U.S. You can contact the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. Support is available 24/7 and it's confidential. They also have an online chat, which is available in both English and Spanish. We'll also include a link to RAIN's website in our show notes.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review if you like the show. You can email case suggestions or comments to truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. The links for our social media pages are included in the show notes. And if you want more content, head over to Patreon to join one of our available tiers. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about my co-host, you can check out her Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.